You don't owe me anything except to remember what I said. Remember what's important. You're important, I said. Your life. Jason tilted his head. I mean, sure. But if a hero isn't ready to lose everything for a greater cause, is that person really a hero? He weighted the word person subtly, as if to stress it could mean a human, a faun, a dryad, a griffin, a pandos, even a god. But I struggled to find a counter-argument. I wanted so badly to reach across the table, grip Jason's wrists, and pull him back into the world of the living. But even if I could, I realized I wouldn't have been doing it for Jason. He was at peace with his choices. I would have been bringing him back for my own selfish reasons, because I didn't want to deal with the sorrow and grief of having lost him. All right, I relented. A fist of pain that had been clenching in my chest for weeks began to loosen. All right, Jason. We miss you, though. His face rippled into colored smoke. I miss you, too. All of you. Apollo, do me a favor. Beware Mithras' his servant. The lion, snake entwined. You know what it is, and what it can do. What? No, I don't. Tell me, please. Jason managed one last faint smile. I'm just a dream in your head, man. You've already got the info. I'm just saying. There's a price for bargaining with the Guardian of the Stars. Sometimes you have to pay that price. Sometimes you have to let someone else do it. This cleared up absolutely nothing, but the dream allowed me no more time for questions. Jason dissolved. My golden fish tacos turned to dust. The Santa Barbara coastline melted, and I woke with a start on my comfy sofa.
You alive?
Asked a hoarse voice. Lou lay on the opposite couch. How she'd gotten herself there from the floor, I couldn't imagine. Her cheeks and eyes were sunken. Her bandaged stumps were speckled with brown polka dots where new blood had seeped through. But she looked a bit less pale, and her eyes were remarkably clear. I could only conclude that my godly healing powers, wherever they had come from, must have done some good. I was so surprised I needed a moment to find my voice. I should be asking you that question. How's the pain? She lifted her stumps gingerly. What, these? I've had worse. My gods, I marveled. A sense of humor. You really are indestructible. Her facial muscles tensed. Maybe an attempt to smile, or just a reaction to her constant searing agony. Meg, what happened to her? How do we find her? I couldn't help but admire her single-mindedness. Despite her pain and her unfair punishment, Lou was still focused on helping our young friend. I'm not sure, I said. We'll find her. But first, you have to get your strength back. When we break out of here, you'll have to be able to move under your own power. I don't think I can carry you. No? Lou asked. I was looking forward to a piggyback ride. Wow. I guess gulls get punchy when they suffer life-threatening injuries. Of course, the whole idea of us busting out of our cell was absurd. Even if we managed it, we were in no shape to rescue Meg or fight the Emperor's forces. But I couldn't lose hope, especially when my no-handed companion was still able to crack jokes. Also, my dream of Jason had reminded me that the Emperor's fasces was hidden somewhere on this floor of the tower, guarded by the snake-entwined lion. The Guardian of the Stars? Mithras's servant, whatever that meant, it had to be close. And if it required a price for letting us stomp-kick Nero's rod of immortality into splinters, I was willing to pay it. I've got some ambrosia left. I turned and groped for my med pack. You need to eat. The door at the end of the corridor slammed open. Gunther appeared outside our cell, holding a silver tray laden with sandwiches and assorted canned sodas. He grinned, showing off all three of his teeth.
Lunch.
The cell's middle bars dropped with the speed of a guillotine. Gunther slid the tray through, and the bars snapped shut again before I could even think of making a move for our captor. I needed food, badly, but just looking at the sandwiches made my stomach roil. Someone had trimmed the crusts off the bread. They were cut into squares rather than triangles. This is how you can tell when your lunch has been prepared by barbarians.
Get your strength back, Gunther said cheerfully. Don't die before the party.
Party? I asked, feeling the tiniest spark of hope. Not because parties were fun, or because I liked cake, both were true, but because if Nero had postponed his big celebration, then perhaps he hadn't yet pressed his doomsday button.
Oh, yes, Gunther said. Tonight, torture for you both, and then we burn down the city.
With that happy thought, Gunther strolled back down the hall, chuckling to himself, leaving us with our tray of barbarian sandwiches. 22. I will go to sleep to save everyone I love. Don't thank me. It's cool. Gods aren't great with deadlines. The concept of having a limited time to do something just doesn't make much sense to an immortal. Since turning into Lester Papadopoulos, I'd gotten used to the idea. Go here by this date, or the world ends. Get this item by next week, or everyone you know will die. Still, I was shocked to realize that Nero was planning to burn down New York that very evening. With cake, festivities, and a good deal of torture, and there was nothing I could do about it. I stared through the bars after Gunther left. I waited for him to skip back into view and yell,
"Just kidding!"
But the hallway remained empty. I could see very little of it except for blank white walls and a single security camera mounted on the ceiling, staring at me with its glossy black eye. I turned to Lou. I have determined that our situation sucks.
Thanks.
She crossed her stumps over her chest like a pharaoh.
I needed that perspective.
There's a security camera out there.
Sure.
Then how were you planning on breaking us out? You would have been seen. Lou grunted.
That's only one camera. Easy to evade. The residential areas? They're completely covered with surveillance from every angle, mic'd for sound, with motion detectors on all the entrances.
I get the idea. It infuriated me. But did not surprise me that Nero's family would be under heavier surveillance than his prisoners. After all, this was a man who'd killed his own mother. Now he was raising his own brood of junior despots. I had to get to Meg. I shook the bars just to say I'd tried. They didn't budge. I needed a burst of godly strength to Apollo smash my way out, but I couldn't rely on my powers to pay heed to what I wanted. Trudging back to my sofa, I glared at the offensive sandwiches and sodas. I tried to imagine what Meg was going through right now. I pictured her in an opulent room much like this one. Minus the bars, perhaps, but a cell, nonetheless. Her every move would be recorded. Her every conversation overheard. No wonder, back in the old days, she preferred to roam the alleys of Hell's Kitchen, accosting thugs with bags of rotten vegetables, and adopting former gods to be her servants. She wouldn't have that outlet now. She wouldn't have me, or Luguselwa by her side. She would be utterly surrounded and utterly alone. I had a sense of how Nero's mind games worked. As a god of healing, I knew something about psychology and mental health. though I'll admit I did not always apply best practices to myself. Having unleashed the beast, Nero would now feign kindness. He would try to convince Meg that she was home. If she just let him help her, she would be forgiven. Nero was his own good cop, bad cop, the consummate manipulator. The thought of him trying to comfort a young girl he had just traumatized made me sick to my core. Meg had gotten away from Nero once before. Defying his will must have taken more strength and courage than most gods I knew would ever possess. But now, thrust back into her old abusive environment, which Nero had passed off as normal for most of her childhood, she would need to be even stronger not to crumble. It would be so easy for her to forget how far she'd gone. Remember what's important. Jason's voice echoed in my head, but Nero's words were knocking around in there too.
We can't change thousands of years of our nature so quickly, can we?
I knew my anxiety about my own weakness was getting mixed up with my anxiety about Meg. Even if I somehow made my way back to Mount Olympus, I didn't trust myself to hold on to the important things I'd learned as a mortal. That made me doubt Meg's ability to stay strong in her old toxic home. The similarities between Nero's household and my family on Mount Olympus made me increasingly uneasy. The idea that we gods were just as manipulative, just as abusive as the worst Roman emperor. Surely that couldn't be true. Oh, wait. Yes, it could. Ugh, I hated clarity. I preferred a softer Instagram filter on my life. Amaro, maybe. Or Perpetua.
We will get out of here.
Lou's voice shook me from my miserable thoughts.
Then we'll help, Meg.
Given her condition, this was a bold statement. I realized she was trying to lift my spirits. It felt unfair that she had to, and even more unfair that I needed it so much. The only response I could think of was, "Do you want a sandwich?" She glanced down at the platter.
"Yeah, cucumber and cream cheese, if there is one. The chef does a good cucumber and cream cheese."
I found the appropriate flavor. I wondered if, back in ancient times, roving bands of Celtic warriors had ridden into battle with their packs full of cucumber and cream cheese sandwiches. Perhaps that had been the secret to their success. I fed her a few bites, but she became impatient.
"Just set it on my chest. I'll figure it out. I have to start sometime."
She used her stumps to maneuver the food toward her mouth. How she could do this without passing out from pain, I didn't know. But I respected her wishes. My son, Asclepius, god of medicine, used to chide me about helping those with disabilities. You can help them if they ask, but wait for them to ask. It's their choice to make, not yours. For a god, this was a hard thing to understand, much like deadlines. But I left Lou to her meal. I picked out a couple sandwiches for myself, ham and cheese, egg salad. It had been a long time since I'd eaten. I had no appetite, but I would need energy if we were going to get out of here. Energy and information. I looked at Lou. "You mentioned microphones?" Her sandwich slipped from between her stumps and landed in her lap. With the slightest of frowns, she began the slow process of corralling it again.
"Surveillance mics, you mean. What about them? Are there any in this cell?"
Lou looked confused.
"You want to know if the guards are listening to us?" "I don't think so. Unless they've installed mics in the last 24 hours. Nero doesn't care what prisoners chat about. He doesn't like it when people whine and complain. He's the only one allowed to do that."
That made perfect Nero-ish sense. I wanted to discuss plans with Lou, if for no other reason than to raise her spirits, to let her know that my terrific troglodyte tunneling team might be on their way to scuttle Nero's Greek fire sewer super soakers. which would mean that Lou's sacrifice had not been completely in vain. Still, I would have to be careful what I said. I didn't want to assume we had privacy. We'd underestimated Nero too many times already. The Emperor didn't seem to know about the other thing, I said. Lou's sandwich toppled into her lap again.
You mean the other thing is happening? You were able to arrange it?
I could only hope we were talking about the same other thing. Lou had instructed us to arrange an underground sabotage of some sort, but for obvious reasons. I hadn't had a chance to tell her specifics about Nico, Will, Rachel, and the Troglodytes, which, by the way, would make the worst band name of all time. I hope so, I said, assuming everything went according to plan. I did not add, and the Troglodytes didn't eat my friends because we brought evil red cattle into their encampment. But let's be honest. So far, things have not gone according to plan. Lou picked up her sandwich again, this time with more dexterity.
I don't know about you, but I've got Nero exactly where I want him.
I had to smile. My gods, this gall. I had gone from disliking and distrusting her to being ready to take a bullet for her. I wanted her at my side, hands or no, as we took down the Emperor and saved Meg. And we would do it, if I could muster even a little bit of Lou's toughness. Nero should fear you, I agreed. Let's assume the other thing is happening. Let's also assume we can get out of here and take care of the, other thing.
Lou rolled her eyes. You mean the Emperor's fasces?
I winced. Yes, fine. That. It would be helpful if I had more information about its protector. Jason called it a guardian of the stars, a creature of Mithras, but...
Wait, who is Jason?
I didn't want to revisit that painful subject, but I gave her the basics, then explained what I had discussed with the son of Jupiter in my dream. Lou tried to sit up. Her face turned the color of putty, making her tattoos darken to purple.
Oof.
She reclined again.
Mithras, eh? Haven't heard that name in a while. Lots of Roman officers worshipped him back in the day. But I never took to those Persian gods. You had to join his cult to find out all the secret handshakes and whatnot. Elite, members-only society, blah blah. The Emperor was an automatic member, of course, which makes sense.
Because? She chewed her cucumber sandwich.
Explains how Nero would have found this guardian. I don't know what it is. I saw it only once, when Nero installed it, I guess you'd say, years ago. She shuddered. Never want to see it again. That lion's face, those eyes, like it could see everything about me. Like it was challenging me to.
She shook her head.
You're right. We need more information if we're going to beat it. And we need to know how Meg is doing.
Why was she looking at me so expectantly? That would be great, I agreed. But since we're stuck in a cell...
You just told me you had a dream vision. Do you have those often?
Well, yes. But I don't control them. At least, not well. Lou snorted.
Typical Roman.
Greek?
Whatever. Dreams are a vehicle, like a chariot. You have to drive them. You can't let them drive you.
You want me to, what, go back to sleep? Gather more information in my dreams? Her eyelids started to droop. Perhaps the word sleep had reminded her body that this was a great idea. In her condition, just being awake a few hours and eating a sandwich would have been equivalent to running a marathon.
Sounds like a plan, Lou agreed. If it's lunchtime now, that gives us what? 7? 8 hours before sunset? Miro will have his party at sunset, I'm sure. Best time of day to watch a city burn. Wake me up when you know more.
But what if I can't get to sleep? And if I do, who's going to wake me up?
Lou started to snore. A tiny piece of cucumber was stuck to her chin, but I decided to leave it there. She might want it later. I sat back on my sofa and stared at the chandelier twinkling cheerfully above. A party tonight for the burning of Manhattan. Nero would torture us. Then I imagined he would sacrifice me in one way or another to appease Python and seal their alliance. I had to think fast and move faster. I needed my powers, strength to bend bars or break through walls, fire to melt Gunther's face the next time he brought us crustless sandwiches. I did not need a nap. And yet, Lou wasn't wrong. Dreams could be vehicles. As the god of prophecy, I'd often sent visions to those who needed them. Warnings, glimpses of the future, suggestions for what sort of temple incense I liked best. I'd driven dreams right into people's heads, but since I'd been mortal, I'd lost that confidence. I had let my dreams drive me, rather than taking the reins like when I drove the sun chariot. My team of fiery horses could always feel when their driver was weak or uncertain. Poor Phaeton had found that out the hard way. Dreams were no less ornery. I needed to see what was happening with Meg. I needed to see this guardian that watched the Emperor's fasces, so I could figure out how to destroy it. I needed to know whether Nico, Will, and Rachel were safe. If I took the reins of my dreams and yelled, "Giddy up!" what would happen? At the very least, I would have unsettling nightmares. At worst, I might drive my mind over the cliffs of insanity and never wake up. But my friends were counting on me. So I did the heroic thing. I closed my eyes and went to sleep.
23. Dream chariot go. Out of my way, I'm a god. Honk honk, beep beep, zoom. Driving the dream chariot did not go well. If the dream police had been on patrol, they would have pulled me over and given me a ticket. Immediately, a psychic crosswind caught my consciousness. I tumbled through the floor, falling past stairwells and offices and broom closets, swirling into the bowels of the tower like I'd been flushed down the cosmic toilet. Which is a disgusting plumbing fixture, by the way. No one ever cleans it. Go up. Go up! I willed my dream. But I couldn't seem to find the reins. I plummeted straight through a vat of Greek fire. That was different. I hit the tunnels below Manhattan, glancing around desperately for any sign of my friends and the troglodytes. But I was traveling too fast, spinning like a pinwheel. I broke through into the labyrinth and hurtled sideways, swept along by a current of superheated ether. I can do this, I told myself. It's just like driving a chariot. Except with no horses. Or chariot. Or body. I ordered my dream to take me to Meg, the person I most wanted to see. I imagined my hands reaching out, grasping reins. Just when I thought I had them, my dreamscape stabilized. I found myself back in the caverns of Delphi, volcanic gases layering the air, the dark shape of Python moving heavily in the shadows.
So, I have you again, he gloated. You shall perish.
I don't have time for you right now. My voice surprised me almost as much as it did the reptile.
What?
Gotta go. I lashed the reins of my dream.
How dare you? You cannot!
I rocketed into reverse like I was tied to a rubber band. Why backward? I hated sitting backward in a moving vehicle. But I suppose the dream was still trying to show me who was boss. I did a roller coaster rewind through the labyrinth, the mortal tunnels, the stairwells of the tower. Finally, I lurched to a stop. My stomach clenched and I retched up, well, whatever ethereal spirit stuff one can retch in the dream world. My head and stomach orbited each other like wobbly lava planets. I found myself on my knees in an extravagant bedroom. Floor-to-ceiling windows overlooked Midtown all the way to the Hudson River. The cityscape was still mercifully untorched. Meg McCaffrey was busy trashing the bedroom. Even without her blades, she was doing an A-plus demolition job with a broken chair leg, which she swung wildly into just about everything. Meanwhile, a Germanus stood blocking the only exit, his arms folded, his expression unimpressed. A woman in an old-fashioned black-and-white maid's uniform wrung her hands and winced every time something went crash. She held a stack of what looked like party dresses draped over one arm. "Miss," said the maid, "if you could just choose an outfit for tonight, perhaps if you didn't..." Oh, that was an antique. "No, that's fine. I'll get another..." "Oh, very well, miss. If you don't like those bed linens, I can..." "There's no need to shred them, miss." Meg's tantrum raised my spirits considerably. "That's it, my friend," I thought. "Give them Tartarus." Meg threw her broken chair leg into a lamp, then picked up another whole chair and raised it over her head, ready to hurl it at the window. A faint knock on the bedroom door made her freeze. The Germanus stepped aside, opened the door, and bowed as Nero swept into the room.
"Oh, my dear, I'm so sorry."
The Emperor's voice oozed sympathy.
"Come, sit with me."
He moved smoothly to the bed and sat at the edge, patting the ripped comforter next to him. I silently rooted for Meg to brain him with the chair. He was right there, in easy reach. But I realized that was Nero's intention, to make himself seem to be at Meg's mercy, to make her responsible for choosing violence, and if she did, he would be free to punish her. She put down the chair, but she didn't go to Nero. She turned her back and crossed her arms. Her lips trembled. I wanted so badly to go to her, to shield her. I wanted to drive my dream chariot into Nero's face. But I could only watch.
"I know you feel terrible,"
Nero said,
"after what you did to your friend."
She wheeled around.
"After what I did?"
She picked up the chair again and threw it across the room, but not at Nero. It wanged off the window, leaving a smudge, but no cracks. I caught the flicker of a smile on Nero's face, a smile of satisfaction, before his expression fixed back into a mask of sympathy.
"Yes, dear. This anger comes from guilt. You led Apollo here. You understood what that meant, what would happen. But you did it anyway. That must be so painful, knowing you brought him to his end."
Her arms trembled.
"No. You cut off..."
She gagged, clearly unable to say the words. She stared down at her own fists, clenched as if they might fly off her wrists if left unattended.
"You can't blame yourself,"
Nero said, in a tone that somehow implied this is all your fault.
"Lugus Elwa made the wrong choice. You know that. You must have understood what would happen. You're too smart to be blind. We've talked about consequences so often."
He sighed with regret.
"Perhaps Cassius was too harsh, taking her hands."
He tilted his head.
"If you like, I can punish him for that."
"What?"
Meg was shaking, as if no longer sure where to direct the giant cannon of her anger.
No! It wasn't him, it was...
She choked on the obvious answer.
You.
With Nero sitting right in front of her, talking in gentle tones, giving her his full attention, she faltered.
Meg!
I shouted, but no sound came forth.
Meg, keep smashing things!
You have a kind heart,
Nero said with another sigh.
You care about Apollo, about Lou. I understand that. And when you unleash the beast,
he spread his hands.
I know that is unsettling.
But it isn't over, Meg.
Will you sit with me? I'm not asking for a hug or for you to stop being angry. But I have some news that may make you feel better.
He patted the mattress again. The maid wrung her hands. The Germanus picked his teeth. Meg wavered. I could imagine the thoughts racing through her head. Is the news about Apollo? Will you offer to let him go if I cooperate? Is Lou still alive? Will she be released? And if I don't play along with your wishes, will I be endangering them? Nero's unspoken message seemed to hang in the air. This is all your fault, but you can still make it right. Slowly, Meg moved to the bed. She sat, her posture stiff and guarded. I wanted to lunge between her and Nero, to insert myself in the gap and make sure he could not get any closer. But I feared his influence was worse than physical. He was worming his way into her mind.
Here is the good news, Meg, he said. We will always have each other. I will never abandon you. You can never make a mistake so great I will not take you back. Lou betrayed you when she betrayed me. Apollo was unreliable, selfish, and, dare I say, a narcissist. But I know you. I have raised you. This is your home.
Oh, gods, I thought. Nero was so good at being evil, and so evil at being good. He made the words lose their meaning. He could tell you the floor was the ceiling with such conviction you might start believing it, especially since any disagreement would unleash the beast. I marveled how such a man could rise to be emperor of Rome. Then I marveled how such a man could ever lose control of Rome. It was easy to see how he'd gotten the mobs on his side. Meg shivered, but whether from rage or despair, I couldn't be sure.
There, there.
Nero put an arm around her shoulders.
You can cry. It's all right. I'm here.
A cold knot formed in my gut. I suspected that as soon as Meg's tears fell, the game would be over. All the independence she'd built and fought so hard to maintain would crumble. She would fold herself against Nero's chest, just as she'd done as a little girl, after Nero killed her real father. The Meg I knew would disappear under the twisted, tortured mess Nero had spent years cultivating. The scene lost cohesion, perhaps because I was too upset to control my dream, or perhaps I simply couldn't bear to watch what happened next. I tumbled down through the tower, floor after floor, trying to regain the reins. I'm not done, I insisted. I need more information. Unfortunately, I got it. I stopped in front of a golden door. Never a good sign, golden doors. The dream swept me inside a small vault. I felt as if I'd entered a reactor core. Intense heat threatened to burn my dream self into a cloud of dream ashes. The air smelled heavy and toxic. Before me, floating above a pedestal of Stygian iron, was the fasces of Nero. A 5-foot-tall golden axe, bundled with wooden rods and lashed together by gold cords. The ceremonial weapon pulsed with power, exponentially more than the two fasci Meg and I had destroyed at Sutro Tower. The meaning of this dawned on me, whispered into my brain like a line of Python's poison prophecy. The three emperors of the Triumvirate hadn't just linked themselves through a corporation. Their life forces, their ambitions, their greed and malice had entwined over the centuries. By killing Commodus and Caligula, I had consolidated all the power of the Triumvirate into the fasces of Nero. I had made the surviving emperor three times as powerful and harder to kill. Even if the fasces were unguarded, destroying it would be difficult. And the fasces was not unguarded. Behind the glowing axe, his hands spread as if in benediction, the guardian stood. His body was humanoid, 7 feet tall. Patches of gold fur covered his muscular chest, arms, and legs. His feathery white wings reminded me of one of Zeus's wind spirits, or the angels that Christians like to paint. His face, however, was not angelic. He had the shaggy maned visage of a lion, ears rimmed with black fur, mouth open to reveal fangs and a panting red tongue. His huge golden eyes radiated a sort of sleepy, self-confident strength. But the strangest thing about the guardian was the serpent that encircled his body from ankles to neck. A slithering spiral of green flesh that corkscrewed around him like an endless escalator. A snake with no head or tail. The lion man saw me. My dream state was nothing to him. Those gold eyes locked on to me and would not let me go. They turned me and examined me as if I were a Trog boy's crystal sphere. He communicated wordlessly. He told me he was the Leontocephaline, a creation of Mithras, a Persian god so secretive, even we Olympians had never really understood him. In Mithras's name, the Leontocephaline had overseen the movement of the stars and the phases of the zodiac. He had also been the keeper of Mithras's great specter of immortality, but that had been lost eons ago. Now the Leontocephaline had been given a new job, a new symbol of power to guard. Just looking at him threatened to tear my mind apart. I tried to ask him questions. I understood that fighting him was impossible. He was eternal. He could no more be killed than one could kill time. He guarded the immortality of Nero. But wasn't there any way? Oh, yes. He could be bargained with. I saw what he wanted. The realization made my soul curl up like a squashed spider. Nero was clever. Horribly, evilly clever. He had set a trap with his own symbol of power. He was cynically betting that I would never pay the price. At last, his point made, the Leontocephaline released me. My dream self snapped back into my body. I sat up in bed, gasping and soaked in sweat. "About time," Lou said. Incredibly, she was on her feet, pacing the cell. My healing power must have done more than just soothe her amputation wounds. She wobbled a bit, but she did not look like someone who'd been using crutches and leg braces just a day ago. Even the bruises on her face had faded. You look better, I noted. How long was I out?
Too long. Gunther brought dinner an hour ago.
She nodded to a new platter of food on the floor. He said he'd be back soon to get us for the party.
But the fool was careless. He left us silverware.
She brandished her stumps. Oh, gods. What had she done? Somehow she had managed to attach a fork to one stump and a knife to the other. She had inserted the handles into the folds of her bandages, then fastened them in place with... Wait, was that my surgical tape? I looked at the foot of my bed. Sure enough, my pack was open, the contents scattered about. I tried to ask how and why at the same time, so it came out as, how I? If you have enough time, some tape, and a set of working teeth, you can do a lot, Lou said proudly. I couldn't wait for you to wake up. Didn't know when Gunther would be back. Sorry about the mess. You can help. She tested her silverware attachments with a few kung fu jabs. I tied these babies on as tight as I could, but you can wrap them one more time. I have to be able to use them in combat. She plopped down on the sofa next to me. While you work, you can tell me about what you learned.
I was not about to argue with someone who could poke me in the eye with a fork.
I was dubious about the effectiveness of her new combat attachments, but I didn't say anything. I understood that this was about Luga Selwa taking charge of her situation, not giving up, doing what she could with what she had. When you've gone through a life-changing shock, positive thinking is the most effective weapon you can wield. I wrapped her utensils more tightly in place while explaining what I'd seen in my dream drive. Meg trying not to crumble under the influence of Nero, the Emperor's fasces floating in its radioactive room, and the leontocephaline waiting for us to try and take it.
We'd best hurry then, Lou grimaced. Tighter with that tape.
My efforts obviously hurt her, judging from the crinkles around her eyes, but I did as she asked.
Right, she said, swiping the air with her utensils. That'll have to do.
I tried for a supportive smile. I wasn't sure Captain Fork and Knife would have much luck against Gunther or the leontocephaline. But if we met a hostile ribeye steak, Lou would be queen of the combat.
And no sign of the other thing? She asked.
I wish I could have told her yes. I had wanted so badly to see visions of the entire Troglodyte Corporation digging into Nero's basement and disabling his fire vats. I would have settled for a dream of Nico, Will, and Rachel charging to our rescue, yelling loudly and waving noisemakers. Nothing, I said. But we still have time.
Yeah, Lou agreed. Minutes and minutes. Then the party starts and the city burns. But okay, let's concentrate on what we can do. I have a plan to get us out of here.
A cold shiver ran down my neck as I thought about my silent conversation with the guardian of the fasces.
And I have a plan for what to do when we get out.
Then we both said together, you're not going to like it.
Oh, joy,
I sighed.
Let's hear yours first.
24. Fie upon Nero. Who wants not my arrow speech? I can relate, though. Lou was right. I hated her plan. But since time was short, and Gunther might show up any minute with our party hats and various torture devices, I agreed to do my part. Full disclosure, I also hated my plan. I explained to Lou what the leontocephaline would demand in exchange for the fasces. Lou glowered like an angry water buffalo.
You're sure?
I'm afraid so. He guards immortality, so...
He expects a sacrifice of immortality.
The words hung in the air like cigar smoke, cloying and suffocating. This was what all my trials had led to. This choice. This was why Python had been laughing at me for months in my dreams. Nero had made the cost of his destruction, giving up the one thing I wanted most. To destroy him, I'd have to forfeit my own godhood forever. Lou scratched her chin with her fork hand.
We must help Meg, whatever the cost.
Agreed. She nodded grimly.
Okay, then that's what we'll do.
I swallowed the coppery taste in my mouth. I was ready to pay the price. If it meant freeing Meg from the beast, freeing the world, freeing Delphi, then I would.
But it would have been nice if Lou had protested just a little on my behalf.
Oh no, Apollo, you can't. I suppose our relationship was past the point of sugarcoating, though. Lou was too practical for that. She was the sort of woman who didn't whine about getting her hands cut off. She just taped silverware to her stumps and got on with business. She wasn't going to give me a pat on the back for doing the right thing, however painful it was. Still, I wondered if I was missing something. I wondered if we were really on the same page. Lou had a faraway look in her eyes, like she was calculating losses on a battlefield. Maybe what I sensed was her worry about Meg. We both knew that under most circumstances, Meg was fully capable of rescuing herself. But with Nero, I suspected Lou, like me, wanted Meg to be strong enough to save herself. We couldn't make the hard choices for her. Yet it was excruciating to stand by while Meg's sense of independence was tested. Lou and I were like nervous parents leaving our child at school for the first day of kindergarten. Except in this case, the kindergarten teacher was a homicidal megalomaniac emperor. Call us crazy, but we didn't trust what Meg might learn in that classroom. Lou met my eyes one last time. I imagined her packing away her doubts and fears in her mental saddlebags for later, when she had time for them, along with her cucumber and cream cheese sandwiches.
Let's get to work, she told me.
It wasn't long before we heard the hallway door bang open and heavy footsteps approaching the cell.
Look casual,
Lou ordered, reclining on her couch. I leaned against the wall and whistled the tune to Maneater. Gunther appeared, a batch of neon yellow zip-tie restraints in his hand. I pointed a finger gun at him. Hey, what's up? He scowled. Then he looked at Lou with her new silverware attachments, and his face split into a grin.
What are you supposed to be?
Lou raised her fork and knife.
Thought I'd carve you up like the turkey you are.
Gunther started to giggle, which was disturbing in a man of his size.
Stupid Lou, you have fork and knife hands.
He tossed the zip ties through the cell's bars.
You, ugly boy, tie her arms behind her back. Then I tie you.
No, I said. I don't think so. His mirth dissipated like foam on skink soup.
What you say?
You want to tie us up? I said very slowly. You'll have to do it yourself. He frowned, trying to make sense of the fact that a teenaged boy was telling him what to do. Clearly, he'd never had children.
I will call other guards.
Lou snorted. You do that. Can't handle us yourself.
I'm too dangerous.
She held up her knife hand in what could have been taken as a rude gesture. Gunther's face turned a mottled red.
You're not the boss of me no more, Lou Guselwa.
Not the boss of me,
Lou mimicked.
Go on, get help. Tell them you couldn't tie up a weakling boy and a no-handed woman by yourself. Or come in here and I will tie you up.
Her plan depended on Gunther taking the bait. He needed to come inside. With his barbarian manhood in question and his honor insulted by a rude piece of silverware, he did not disappoint. The middle bars of the cell retracted into the floor,
Gunther strode through. He didn't notice the salve I'd slathered across the threshold. And let me assure you, Will Solace's burn ointment is slippery stuff. I'd been wondering which direction Gunther might fall. Turns out backward. His heels shot out from under him, his legs crumpled, and his head slammed hard against the marble floor, leaving him flat on his back and groaning halfway inside the cell. "No!" Lou yelled. I charged the door. Lou had told me that the cell bars were motion-sensitive. They snapped upward, determined to stop my escape, but they had not been designed to compensate for the weight of a Germanus lying across the threshold. The bars smashed Gunther against the ceiling like a hyperactive forklift, then lowered him again, their hidden mechanisms whirring and creaking in protest. Gunther gurgled in pain, his eyes crossed. His armor was thoroughly crushed. His ribs probably weren't in much better shape. But at least the bars hadn't gone straight through him. I did not want to witness that kind of mess, nor step through it.
"Get his sword," Lou ordered.
I did. Then, using Gunther's body as a bridge across the slippery salve, we escaped into the hall. The eye of the security camera watching as we fled.
"Here."
Lou gestured to what appeared to be a closet door. I kicked it in, realizing only afterward that, one, I had no idea why, and two, I trusted Lou enough not to ask. Inside were shelves stacked with personal possessions. Packs, clothes, weapons, shields. I wondered what unfortunate prisoners they had once belonged to. Leaning against a back corner were my bow and quivers. Aha! I grabbed them. With amazement, I drew the arrow of Dodona from my otherwise empty quivers. Thank the gods. How are you still here?
Thou art pleased to see me,
the arrow noted. Well, I thought the Emperor would have taken you, or turned you into kindling.
Nero is not worth a fig, said the arrow. He seest not my brilliance.
Somewhere down the hall, an alarm began to blare. The overhead lighting changed from white to red.
Could you talk with your projectile later? Lou suggested. We have to move.
Right, I said. Which way to the fascies?
Left, Lou said. So you go right.
Wait, what? You said it's left.
Right.
Right?
Odds bodkins.
The arrow vibrated in my hand.
Just listen to the goal.
I'm going after the fascies, Lou explained. You're going to find Meg.
But my head spun. Was this a trick? Hadn't we agreed? I was ready for my close-up, my big heroic sacrifice. The Leontocephaline demands immortality for immortality. I have to...
I've got it covered, Lou said. Don't worry. Besides, we Celts lost most of our gods long ago. I'm not going to stand by while another deity dies.
But you're not... I stopped myself. I was about to say immortal. Then I considered how many centuries Lou had been alive. Would the Leontocephaline accept her life as payment? My eyes filled with tears.
No.
I said, Meg can't lose you. Lou snorted.
I won't get myself killed if I can help it.
I have a plan, but you need to move. Meg is in danger. Her room is 6 floors up, southeast corner. Follow the stairs at the end of the hall. I started to protest, but the arrow of Dodona buzzed in warning. I needed to trust Lou. I needed to cede the battle to the better warrior. Fine, I relented. Can I at least tape a sword to your arm?
No time, she said. Too unwieldy. Wait, actually, that dagger over there. Unsheath it and put the blade between my teeth.
How will that help?
Probably won't, she admitted. But it'll look cool.
I did as she asked. Now she stood before me as Lubeard the Pirate, cutlery-wielding terror of the seven seas.
Hurrock,
she mumbled around the blade. Then she turned and raced away.
What just happened?
I asked.
Thou hast made a friend, the arrow said. Now refillest thy quivers, so thou shalt not shoot with me.
Right. With shaky hands, I scavenged as many intact arrows as I could find in the prisoner's storeroom and added them to my arsenal. Alarms kept blaring. The blood-red light was not helping my anxiety level. I started down the hall. I'd barely made it halfway when the arrow of Dodona buzzed.
Look out!
A mortal security guard in tactical riot gear rounded the corner, barreling toward me with his handgun raised. Not being well prepared, I screamed and threw Gunther's sword at him. By some miracle, the hilt hit him in the face and knocked him down.
That is not normally how one useth a sword, the arrow said.
Always a critic, I grumbled.
Meg is in peril, he said.
Meg is in peril, I agreed.
I stepped over the mortal guard, now curled on the floor and groaning.
Terribly sorry,
I kicked him in the face. He stopped moving and began to snore. I ran on. I burst into the stairwell and took the concrete steps two at a time. The arrow of Dodona remained clutched in my hand. I probably should have put it away and readied my bow with normal missiles. But to my surprise, I found that its running Shakespearean commentary boosted my shaky morale. From the floor above me, two Germani rushed into the stairwell and charged me with spears leveled. Now lacking even Gunther's sword, I thrust out my free hand, shut my eyes, and screamed as if this would make them go away. Or at least make my death less painful. My fingers burned. Flames roared. The two Germani yelled in terror, then were silent. When I opened my eyes, my hand was smoking but unharmed. Flames licked at the peeling paint on the walls. On the steps above me were two piles of ash where the Germani had been.
Thou shouldst do that more often,
the arrow advised. The idea made me sick to my stomach. Once I would have been delighted to summon the power to blowtorch my enemies. But now, after knowing Lu, I wondered how many of these Germani really wanted to serve Nero, and how many had been conscripted into his service with no choice. Enough people had died. My grudge was with only one person, Nero, and one reptile, Python.
Hurry,
the arrow said with new urgency.
I sense, yes, Nero has sent guards to fetch Meg.
I wasn't sure how it had gleaned this information, if it was monitoring the building's security system or eavesdropping on Nero's personal psychic hotline, but the news made me clench my teeth. There will be no Meg fetching on my watch, I growled. I slid the arrow of Dodona into one of my quivers and drew a missile of the non-Shakespearean variety. I bounded up the stairs. I worried about Luguselwa, who must have been facing the Leontocephaline by now. I worried about Nico, Will, and Rachel, whom I hadn't seen any sign of in my dreams. I worried about the forces of Camp Half-Blood, who might be charging into a suicidal rescue mission at this very moment. Most of all, I worried about Meg. To find her, I would fight the entire tower by myself if I had to. I reached the next landing. Had Lou said 5 floors up? 6. How many had I already climbed?
Arg!
I hated numbers. I shouldered my way into another bland white corridor and ran in the direction I thought might be southeast. I kicked open a door and discovered, try not to be too shocked, that I was in the entirely wrong place. A large control room glowed with dozens of monitors. Many showed live feeds of huge metal reservoirs, the Emperor's Greek fire vats. Mortal technicians turned and gawked at me. Germani looked up and frowned. A Germanus, who must have been the commander, judging from the quality of his armor and the number of shiny beads in his beard, scowled at me with disdain.
"You heard the Emperor's order,"
he snarled at the technicians.
"Light those fires now! And guards, kill this fool."
25. Beware tech support. Don't press the naughty button. Welp, now you did it. How many times had I said those words? Kill this fool. We gods bandied about statements like that all the time, but we never gave thought to the cost. Like, actual fools may die. And in this situation, that fool was me. A millisecond's scan of the room showed me 10 enemies in various states of readiness. In the far corner, 4 Germani were scrunched together on a broken-down sofa, eating Chinese food from takeout boxes. 3 technicians sat in swivel chairs, manning control consoles. They were human security, each with a sidearm, but they were too focused on their work to be an immediate threat. A mortal guard stood right next to me, looking surprised that I'd just pushed through the door he was monitoring. Oh, hello. A second guard stood across the room, blocking the other exit. That left just the Germanus leader, who was now rising from his chair, drawing his sword. So many questions flashed through my mind. What did the mortal technician see through the mist? How would I get out of here alive? How did leader guy sit comfortably in that swivel chair while wearing a sword? Was that lemon chicken I smelled? And was there enough for me? I was tempted to say, "Wrong room," close the door, and beat it down the hall. But since the technicians had just been ordered to burn down the city, that wasn't an option. "Stop!" I sang out of instinct. "In the name of love!" Everyone froze. Maybe because my voice had magic powers, or maybe because I was horribly off-key. I bow-punched the guy next to me in the face. If you have never been punched by a fist holding a bow, I do not recommend it. The experience is like being hit with brass knuckles, except it hurts the archer's fingers much more. Door guy number 1 went down. Across the room, door guy number 2 raised his gun and fired. The bullet sparked off the door next to my head. Fun fact from a former god who knows acoustics. If you fire a gun in an enclosed space, you have just deafened everyone in that room. The technicians flinched and covered their ears. The Germani's Chinese takeout boxes went flying. Even leader guy stumbled half out of his chair. My ears ringing, I drew my bow and shot 2 arrows at once. The first knocking the gun out of door guy number 2's hand, the second pinning his sleeve to the wall. Yes, this ex-archery god still had some moves. The technicians returned their attention to their controls. The Chinese food contingent tried to extract themselves from their sofa. Leader guy charged me, his sword in both hands, pointed directly at my soft underbelly. Ha ha! I initiated a home plate slide. In my mind, the maneuver had seemed so simple. I would glide effortlessly across the floor, avoiding leader guy's thrust, veering between his legs as I fired at multiple targets from a supine position. If Orlando Bloom could do it in Lord of the Rings, why couldn't I? I neglected to consider that this floor was carpeted. I fell flat on my back, and leader guy tripped over me, barreling headfirst into the wall. I did get off one shot, an arrow that skimmed across the nearest technician's control panel and knocked him out of his chair in surprise. I rolled aside as Leader Guy turned and hacked at me. Having no time to knock another arrow, I pulled one out and jabbed it into his shin. Leader Guy howled. I scrambled to my feet and jumped onto the bank of control consoles. Back off! I yelled at the technicians, doing my best to aim one arrow at all three of them. Meanwhile, the Chinese Food 4 were fumbling with their swords. Door Guy number 2 had tugged his sleeve free of the wall and was hunting around for his pistol. One of the technicians reached for his gun. Nope! I fired a warning arrow, impaling the seat of his chair a millimeter from his crotch. I was loath to harm hapless mortals. Wow, I really said that sentence. But I had to keep these guys away from the naughty buttons that would destroy New York. I knocked 3 more arrows at once and did my best to look threatening. Get out of here! Go! The technicians looked tempted. It was, after all, a very fair offer. But their fear of me was apparently not as great as their fear of the Germani. Still growling in pain from the arrow in his leg, Leader Guy yelled,
"Do your job!"
The technicians lunged toward their naughty buttons. The 4 Germani charged me. "Sorry, guys." I split my arrows, shooting each technician in the foot, which I hoped would keep them distracted long enough for me to deal with the Germani. I blasted the closest barbarian into dust with an arrow to the chest, but the other 3 kept